Welcome back. This is episode 10 of Teach with Tech, the podcast from the Instructional Consulting Office in the Indiana University School of Education. I'm Chris Essex, and I welcome you once more to check out our blog for show notes and information about upcoming episodes. We try to do this every month, and it looks like we're going to squeak by once again, getting it in just before the end of June here. The blog has information about past episodes, upcoming episodes, and resources that I just sometimes can't even fit into these podcasts, such as with this particular episode. We'll have some teaching with technology tips that are not going to be included here in the podcast. They'll be there on the blog, and you'll find that at http://teachwtech.blogspot.com. That's http://teachwtech.blogspot.com. I want to say thanks to everybody for the comments posted on our blog and an email about our recent episodes, which have featured some really cool interviews, which I really enjoyed making, and I hope you enjoyed listening to. Interviews with people who are doing really exciting education-related podcast projects. And they're always going to be available online as long as this podcasting thing keeps happening. And you can get them by subscribing to our series over at, I guess they call it iTunes, don't they? Or you can go to the blog website, and there's a link to getting the podcast episodes individually. You can, of course, also always, if you have questions or comments about these episodes or upcoming episodes, send us an email at ic@indiana.edu. Well, now that that's all out of the way, let's get on with this current episode. This is episode 10. Really excited about this one. Got another interview. This one is, I've enjoyed all of these, but this one should be particularly interesting to a wide range of people, because in this episode, we're going to take a step away from talking about just podcasting, as fun, as exciting a topic as that is, and we're going to speak more broadly about teaching with technology. I know that podcasting can be a bit complicated, a bit challenging at first for some teachers. It's probably not for every teacher in every situation. Today, as I say, we're going to take a broader look at teaching with technology, and we're going to give everyday teachers, whether you're in the K-12 classroom or higher ed, some tips that you can use immediately. I'm going to be talking with Anne Ottenbrecht Lefwich, and she's going to be providing us with some really neat, we'd like to get to 50, probably we won't, but 50 tips for using technology in your classroom tomorrow. Well, first off, let me thank you again for joining us today at Teach with Tech. What was your inspiration for putting together this list?
Well, my inspiration is actually through my mother, and she is one of the most fantastic teachers I've ever seen, but she doesn't necessarily have all the tech skills. So I'm always trying to think of very simple ways to get her to start using technology, and it also kind of stems off of my dissertation and my interest in teacher education, where I'm trying to get more people to adopt technology and start to use technology in their classroom because I really see the benefit in it, and I want to share that with other people. So by, I think, getting very simple things that people can take directly back to their classroom, I think that would be very beneficial for technology coordinators and even just for teachers who are listening that want to encourage their colleagues or find a way to help their colleagues implement something simple. So if we give them a simple idea, something they can do, something they can be successful at, I have a feeling that they're going to be more open to integrating technology.
So you've got this list of tips, and I understand that these are ideas that you can take and immediately use where there's not too much of a learning curve, they don't take too much preparation time, they don't require the latest and greatest hardware and software setup.
Right, because that's the thing, too, with technology. We don't have a lot of the technology resources. The teachers don't have it. They don't have the newest, greatest, latest, whatever, cutting edge, bleeding edge of technology. And even if they did have it, when it's so difficult like that, it discourages you to do anything to use it. So by having very simple ways, I'm a firm believer in the fact that if we had like Microsoft Word, I could do I could integrate Microsoft Word into every single lesson that I would teach. So it doesn't necessarily matter in terms of the technology. Yes, all these different new fancy technologies are great. They enable us to do better, bigger things. But until that technology, the bugs have been worked out of it, and it's very easy, very seamless for the teacher, I don't think that it's really that great of an asset for them.
So today we're leaving the bleeding edge of technology behind, and we're going to focus on those things that use basic tools that are easy to use, that teachers probably already have on their desktop already. Pretty cool. I know people are excited. I can just tell for us to get to that first technology teaching tip. What should we start with?
Well, one of the simplest things that I always like to recommend to even my pre-service teachers, and they're just so shocked when they actually see this, is templates. This is something that's so simple, but not many people use it, and there are so many different templates out there. One of the ones that I like the best is actually a template for Jeopardy, which was made by Mark Damon, I believe his name was. And if you just search template Jeopardy PowerPoint, you'll come up with it. It is phenomenal. He already has the whole thing set up so that all you have to do is actually type in your questions. It has the sound waves. It even has Alex Trebek on the very front screen. So to just be able to download this and insert your questions and your answers, I've used this with my pre-service teachers in my undergraduate courses, and they love it. They absolutely love it. We play Jeopardy. We have the sound going in the background. So, I mean, just simple things like that. The templates just really range. On Microsoft Education has some really great templates that you can download, but teachers have templates out there as well. I was just searching for some, and they have ready-made field trip slips that you just have to enter your name into. So that's something that I really don't think people take enough advantage of.
Templates. Well, I'm definitely checking out that Jeopardy one. Are these all for Office?
There are some for Microsoft Office. There's a ton out there for Kidspiration, Inspiration, and KidPix. Those are the main ones that I've searched for personally. But I know that Apple, is it ClarisWorks?
Well, it's AppleWorks now. It used to be called ClarisWorks.
Okay, now AppleWorks. I know they have a ton of them out there, I'm sure, that you can download. But there are so many things out there. And even if you don't have Microsoft Office software, if you actually go online, you can actually download OpenOffice. I forget what the address is. I'll get it to you. But if you go to OpenOffice, then you can download that, and you can use all of the Microsoft templates.
I know the templates are one of those things that make the Apple iLife suite so powerful, because they come with so many great templates already, iPhoto, iDVD, iWeb, that you can do really professional things without really knowing a lot about the application. I think it's fair to say that most applications have these templates, but how many of us just open up with a new document and try to figure it out from there when we could have things so much easier?
Right, and if they're not built in, then you can go online and get some more.
But I wonder how many teachers, out there, given this new software, even know that the templates exist.
No, and I don't think they do, because I show my pre-service teachers, and they're just like, oh, that is so cool. Things that you necessarily don't know how to make, and maybe really don't need to know how to make something, flip in a certain way or put a certain watermark feature in there, but you really like it back there, and you just don't have the time to do it for yourself. I mean, that's something that can be done in 5 minutes. You download it, you add in your information, and then you're done. Google Earth is one of the things that, one of the recent applications that I've been using and showing my pre-service teachers that I really enjoy, because you can see all of the different aspects of the United States and the entire world. You just have to enter in your address or what you're interested in looking at, and it takes you right there. You can also do different checkboxes in terms of roads or places to eat, or even what the population of the area is, looking at the geographical features. So it's really, really a great program in terms of showing students geography, going from one place to another, or even looking like at the Grand Canyon. It allows you to do a 3D tour, so it actually looks like you're flying above it and flying through it. So just really neat features about it. And there's actually a new program, I believe it's called Mapopedia, or something along those lines. And you can actually select on certain buildings within Google Earth or within this map, and you can add in information. So I selected on the Indianapolis Children's Museum, and you can mouse over different things, and people have already added things in there. But so I could go to Dearborn, Michigan, which is where I'm originally from, and actually select Henry Ford and Greenfield Village, and I could click on that, and I can add in more information. And since it's a wiki, other people can edit it, so if they don't think that that's the correct information or if they don't think that that's important, they can actually delete it. So if some kid comes in and adds my house on there, then they can go in and delete it. So it's a really nice way. This would be something that kids could do maybe in terms of mapping out their neighborhood or even mapping out, you know, their state when they have to do certain things like that to get a really good idea of where things are. I know a lot of students do, I think usually in the third or fourth grade, they do My Community. Or it might even be younger than that. Fourth grade is typically your states. So second grade, they start doing like My Communities. So you could take pictures of places around your community that are important, so maybe like a picture of your town hall, and you can start creating your own actual like tours or your own maps. So that necessarily they wouldn't take it into their classroom tomorrow, but it requires a lot less training, and it's fairly easy to use, so teachers could use it in many different ways.
I recently shared Google Earth with a second and third grade teacher that I have been working with, and she was just amazed by it. We did the 3D tour, like you mentioned, of the Grand Canyon, and I was just about to leave for London, and I could, you know, show them exactly what that meant, flying from Bloomington to London, and I actually was able to find my hotel on the map, and that was pretty darn cool.
It really is amazing, and it gives them, with all the things that we're talking about with globalization now, I think it gives them a lot better perspective of what's going on in the world. Just even like with World Cup soccer, my husband and I said, where is that country? We've never heard of that country before. So we were actually able to look it up and see where it was and fly to it virtually.
Well, was it Ghana, maybe?
Well, I don't think it was that one. It was one that started with a T.
Maybe Trinidad, Tobago, or Tobago, however that's pronounced.
I don't even remember.
I've never heard of this Mapopedia thing, though. That also sounds really interesting. I'll definitely have to check that out for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to give you the website. I'm pretty sure it's called Mapopedia. Actually, I have it up here. Wikimapia is what it's called.
Oh, and I should add, I remember one of the nicest things about using Google Earth in classroom is that it doesn't require a live internet connection. You can actually view cached versions of the places you've been to.
Yeah, that's what it did for me. That's what I actually did when I was going around looking at my dissertation sites. I would actually download Google Earth onto my computer, and then I would just use my computer as a big navigational system. And I did that for my honeymoon, too, to select different areas that we wanted to go to. So,
do you have any technology tips, especially for classrooms that have just one computer or a couple of computers, maybe a computer hooked up to a TV, not access to a full lab?
Well, you've got a couple of different options. One of the really great options that I like, I don't know if you've ever heard of United Streaming, but that's a new thing coming out from Discovery, and my mother is actually, again, she's not a big, huge technology user, but she loves United Streaming, and I can totally see why. There are these little clips, and you just search for these little clips, and they have all of these different videos that you can show at a moment's notice. You can even download the videos and actually edit them, use them how you want to. So that's a really easy way to do it in terms of the one computer classroom. Another great way that I really liked is I heard of a teacher that used to, on her website every day, at the end of the day, she would gather her students around, and this was in an elementary classroom, she would gather her students around on the rug, and they would talk about what they had learned that day, and then the teacher would type it up on her website. Well, now blogs have made it so easy for us that teachers with no website experience can have their own blog by going to the multiple free blogging sites. And then they can actually blog about it and ask their students, okay, what did we learn today? They can blog it up and write it so the parents can check in and say, oh, okay, this is what they did today. So you have like an up-to-date account of what was going on during the day, and that's a really great way for teachers to not only kind of refresh what they did throughout the day and reinforce the learning, but also to communicate with parents, hey, this is what's going on in my classroom. Maybe even here are some follow-up activities if you want to do it with your kids at home. So it's just a really very easy way to keep up to date and have your students involved in it as well. And then from there, you can take that blog and actually make yourself a newsletter by just copying and pasting it into a newsletter format and delete what you don't need and send it home with your students.
Okay, well, we've talked about some great basic uses of technology in the classroom. I just wonder, what do you think are the greatest barriers the teachers face in integrating technology in the classroom, and you know, why isn't it more widely done?
Well, I can cite from the literature and say that you know there are those external, we call them extrinsic and intrinsic, actually, is what Dr. Ertmer's research has shown are barriers to technology integration. And the extrinsic would be like resources, time, support. And then your intrinsic barriers would be more like along the lines of your beliefs, your pedagogical beliefs and your practices and things along those lines. And my research is actually looking into these exemplary technology-using teachers. These teachers in particular had won MCODE Awards, which is the Michigan Consortium for Outstanding Achievements in Teaching with Technology. And they had to make a digital portfolio about how they met the different standards. And so they actually... They, regardless of what resources they had in their classroom, they were still able to integrate technology. I remember when I applied for the same award, one of the other people that won it too, she only had one computer, and she was in downtown Detroit in a very low socioeconomic status area, and she was still able to integrate technology and without the internet as well. So one laptop, she was still able to meet all of the ISTE standards with these low socioeconomic status children, and I was just amazed. So I don't think it has to do with resources. I really think it has to do with that intrinsic belief that technology can make a difference in your classroom, that you're willing and open to that kind of change, and you're willing and open to fail, to be quite honest. Because so many times with technology, it's not working. We have to shift, we have to change. So it's just really being open to that change and not being afraid of the technology in itself.
Do you have any examples, I wonder, of how technology can be used for, oh, not for content learning or, you know, learning about technology, but for things like classroom management, any suggestions, any things along those lines?
One of the other things that I actually did within my first grade classroom when I did my student teaching is a really simple idea. I took a digital camera around because I was having difficult times with certain behaviors from certain children. I would keep getting the same repeat behaviors, so getting up out of their chair when it wasn't time to, or talking out of turn, or just, you know, those kind of classroom management problems that you often get. And at the time, I felt very strongly about not using verbal, because I had to keep saying it over and over again, and I had read somewhere that verbally calling children out like that, that it is actually bad for their self-esteem. So I wanted to find a nonverbal way to do it. So I actually met with the child and said, you know, what kind of behaviors do you think you can improve on? And they actually came up with a list of certain things. And I said, what do you think is the most important right now? And so, like, the one student said, you know, I talk when it's not my turn, or I yell too loud when it's not my, you know, when it's not my turn to talk. And so I had him say, okay, why don't, or I had him actually do a, I said, make a visual picture of what will remind you not to talk. He took a picture of himself with his mouth wide open with his hands next to it like a megaphone. And so what I did then is I actually took that digital picture, I printed it up, and I taped it onto his desk so that anytime that he was talking too loud, all I would have to do is come over and actually tap on the picture without actually having to say anything, and the student would be able to recognize that that wasn't the kind of behavior and I wouldn't have to say anything. So that was an easy way to kind of correct behavior with technology, kind of an interesting way.
Well, I promised myself that I was not going to talk about K-12 podcasting specifically in this episode, but I'm going to break that promise just because I think it's pretty interesting. We recently, of course, had an interview with Tony Vincent from Omaha Public Schools here on Teach with Tech, which I recommend that people check out if you haven't already. What do you think about podcasting with kids, say, at the elementary level?
Podcasting at the elementary level, I think, has some incredible capabilities. I don't necessarily think that it's a simple way for you to use technology in your classroom, at least not right now, just because of the servers and everything else that goes along with it. In terms of iPods, for me, I always carry around my iPod with a little microphone on the top, and I record so many of my meetings and different things along those lines. So in terms of, I really see the possibilities for podcasting with K-12 as a lot with reading and literacy development. I can see a lot of students recording their own voices and then checking back on it in terms of what words were, a lot of learning as a second language. I can see that as a possibility. A lot of what I've seen is students using, or actually organizations using, podcasting as a form of tours, to actually create tours. But I think that the students could create tours of, like, their classroom, or they could create tours of their school building, so that when someone comes into their school, they could actually take a tour with their little video iPod and be shown which rooms are which. Or even for at the Visitors Bureau, like in Bloomington, you could have a little tour guide set up by your local elementary school of things that, you know, other kids have to see in Bloomington, like the fun things to do, or just the historical things to do as well, or even like virtual tours. So if you want to take a tour back to, you know, when the Declaration of Independence, and describe what's going on, include pictures and things like that. So that's where I think, you know, making videos along those lines, and using it a lot for literacy development, and for, that's what I see it as right now with the kind of technology and support that we have right now. I think that's where it's going.
Well, I think we have time for one last technology tip for teaching with technology in your classroom tomorrow. Are there any particularly new or recent tips or tricks that you'd like to share with us?
One of the things that I most recently did, I volunteer in my mom's classroom sometimes. I like just to keep myself fresh with what's going on. So when I went in there last, she was taking the kids down to the computer lab, and she just said, oh, okay, Ann, this is kind of what we're doing. We're doing something with, I even forget what they were studying, but she took me down to the computer lab. And they're all Mac computers, which was fantastic. So I went down there and had all the kids sit at the computers. They logged in. Everything was fine. And this is coming from with my mother, again, who doesn't necessarily have a lot of experience with technology. So when she is having them log in, you can kind of, you know, sense a little bit of apprehension, but her classroom management skills seem to kind of just take over again. And, you know, if you have a question, you raise your hand, and she gets to everyone. She lowers her voice to make sure everyone, you know, is quieted down enough to hear her voice. But so the data projector ended up being gone because one of the other teachers had just taken it and brought it down to her room. So that kind of scrapped my entire lesson that I had put together. So I got to think of something on the fly, which I think is a great thing for teachers to, you know, always have a bag of tricks. So what we decided to do, and these are second graders, so, you know, you can't do anything significant in terms of online. So we decided that we were going to write a story. So each kid had their own computer, and they start writing their own story about whatever they wanted to. I said, you know, the sky's the limit. Go ahead and think of something. And, of course, you have some of the kids that say, I can't think of anything. So you go around, and you start saying, you know, well, what do you really like? What do you enjoy? So all the kids started writing their own story. I said, don't worry about the spelling. Don't worry about capitalization. Just write, because literacy so much now, I think, is just about getting your ideas down and starting to write and starting to interpret. And so the students started writing, and so about 2 minutes I said, okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to get up and we're going to move to somebody else's computer. So they all got up and they switched computers in an organized fashion with, you know, someone that was further down. We had them all move down. So it was kind of exciting because the kids got to 4 or 5 times switch to different computers, and by the end of it, they ended up with like this goofy story that they and their friends had all made. It wasn't necessarily spelled correctly, but the students that were more advanced could look over these other students and say, oh, well, he spelled this wrong. This is what he meant to say, or go back and capitalize things. So that was something for them to do. And then other students were able to read what the other advanced students may have already written and add to that. So it was really kind of a neat last minute thing, which I had read about before, and I said, oh, when I do substitute teaching, if I ever need to do something like that, this is a good thing to do. And I got to try it out just this past summer, so that was pretty exciting.
That was a neat project. It reminds me vaguely of a project that I did when I was with the Air Clearinghouse of Reading English Communication, called the Global Campfire. You can still find it online, though it's not an active site. What we did was it was an online site. Well, I guess most sites are online, right? But it was a website where students, well, we started a story in 4 or 5 different genres. There was a horror story, there was a science fiction story, detective story, etc. And we just started just the basic stem of the story, just the very beginning. And we allowed students to build on from that. And we had students, children from all over the world would enter in their suggestions. And It was a pretty project. So we'd have a student from, you know, Canada, and then a student from Norway, and then a student all building the same story. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, well now you can do that with Wikipedia, like, you know, with wikis, and make it so easy that kids can build their own stories.
Well, we haven't quite made it to our goal of sharing 50 tips to teach with technology in your classroom tomorrow, but I think most people find that we went through some pretty darn interesting and useful technology tips. I want to thank Anne Altenbright Klickwich again for joining us. She's here at Indiana University Bloomington in the IST Department, Instructional Systems Technology. And maybe we'll have her back on and talk again, perhaps about some tips focusing on post-secondary education. Keep in touch with us here at Teach With Tech. The URL for our blog, once again, is http://teachwtech.blogspot.com. And we'll have all the URLs that are related to today's broadcast there as soon as possible.